Hi, I'm Keidra Cheney, and my favorite thing is K-pop plush dolls.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome back to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is this episode is coming out of time a little bit. I missed last week because of Rosh Hashanah, preparing for Rosh Hashanah. And this Sunday is Kol Nidre. It's the night before Yom Kippur. And so I figure do a Friday night release, early Saturday morning release. This is a really lovely episode that's going to have you following some new hashtags on Instagram. I got to interview Keidra Cheney, who is someone I've known online in the Chicago Twitter world for over a decade, a very long time. And she is an expert. I've referenced her on previous episodes because she's an expert in fandoms. Even though it's not her profession and it's not her academic area, she is my go-to person when it comes to understanding fandoms, K-pop, the online actions of fandoms, gatekeeping, toxicity, the good, the bad, and the very ugly of being a fan in the 2020s. So Keidra is wonderful. And in this episode, she introduces us to K-pop Dollstagram, which is this whole world on Instagram of people who have plushy dolls of K-pop stars. And once you add that hashtag to your follow, you're just going to be delighted every time you open Instagram when you see these adorable plushy dolls on their adventures. Stay home, stay safe, wear your mask, wash your hands, and check your voter registration. I feel like if you're listening to this podcast, you're all over it. But if on the odd chance you're not all over it, get registered to vote. Vote for Biden and check out your local elections, too. This episode, I normally record my Zoom to my laptop. And when I recorded this one, I recorded it to the cloud. And when you record to the cloud, you only get one audio track. And so you're going to hear more coughing. There's just going to be more environmental noise in this episode because I only had one audio track to edit, which meant when I was coughing or sniffling from allergies, normally I can mute that out and take it out. And sorry, but my allergies are in full glory, as are some ambulances and just some cicadas, just the sounds of the city. So with that said, vote, stay home, stay safe, wear your mask and wash your hands and follow K-pop Dollstagram on your Instagram. You will enjoy it. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we talk to people about how they found their favorite things, the joy it brings to their lives. And I am so thrilled that today I am here with Keidra Cheney. Keidra, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Leah. Thank you for inviting me. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm so excited to talk because something I've talked to a lot and many of my guests about is finally getting to a place in, I don't know, life where we're like, you know what, I'm just gonna, with no sense of irony, with no detached cynicism, it's a lot better to just be a fan of something than to like ironically like something or have a cynical detachment. And when I think about people who model being like a joyful fan of something, I always think of you.
That's awesome.
If I've learned anything from following you on Twitter for 10 or 12 years, however long it's been, it was watching you go to Japan for Shiny. Is it called Shiny or Shine?
Shiny. Yeah.
For Shiny concerts and going on these like massive trips, so low to see the thing you loved. And like it was just like so it was I have always loved watching you taking those trips. And I think that you are the person in our like Chicago Twitter world who most epitomizes loving the thing you love and not being detached. So I'm so excited to talk to you today.
That, honestly, I can't think of a greater compliment than that, because I love music and I love all kinds of music, and I love K-pop and I love SHINee and like all of those things. I don't believe in having like guilty pleasures. Like that's one of those things where like if you like something, just like it and it makes you feel good, like, and it's not hurting anybody. And if it's like, if it's music that you just find sincere joy from listening to, even if other people think it's corny and they don't get it, that's more for you. Like,
right.
Enjoying what you enjoy and finding like pleasure in it, I think is the best. And especially with like music, I try not to be a snob, even if I don't have the same taste as other people. Having, if you just sincerely love something, that's what I'm down with. I don't have to love it. I don't have to get it. But if you love it sincerely, then I always have space for that. And I'm always like here to cheer it on. One of my, I'm sorry, I'm just totally rambling.
Go.
So I was in a band. Maybe I'm still in one. I'm not sure. We haven't played in like 2 years. But
now you can say 6 months of the 2 years you haven't played because of a pandemic.
Exactly. So. I'll blame it. Yay! Thank you. I love excuses. But my
you play bass, right?
I do.
Yeah.
My bandmate and I actually have so few musical interests in common. And like, but what we do have in common is that we love what we love, like obsessively. And she's a huge Mariah Carey stan. And her love of Mariah Carey, I just find inspiring. She's just like, she's the queen of Christmas. I'm going to go see her in New York. And so like we vibe off of, because we're both like that. Where we're just like, I'm going to see my favorite in concert and we're going to go. And so she's like a hardcore lamb. And like, that's the fandom name of Mariah Carey fans. And she's a hardcore lamb, and she goes to the concerts like Radio City, I think she plays at in New York. And when she saw her in Las Vegas, and she's just hardcore into Mariah Carey. And I like Mariah Carey, but I'm not like a hardcore stan of hers, but like her just pure and enthusiastic and just always like, this is why she's the best. And I'm going to share with you why I love this song and why, like, that is the kind of fandom for me. That is what attracts me to fandom and what makes me excited. I'm always excited for other people's excitement about something, even if I don't like it myself. And as long as you're not like, your thing sucks and my thing is better, then I'm just like, I always have room and enthusiasm for people's just excitement over, especially music. I'm always down to hear somebody's like favorite song, hearing why and what like inspires them. That's just always so exciting to me. So.
For me, the thing that finally taught me just embrace being a fan and loving the thing, it seems, I think, super cliche, but it was Hamilton. Mm-hmm. That when the Cast album came out and I started listening to it and I started going down the rabbit hole of Hamilton. And then I was like, you know what? I am a well-paid single woman and I'm going to spend the equivalent of my mortgage and I'm going to go to New York and I'm going to see it. And I saw the original cast. And it was like, and I had a client at that time. She was like, oh, can we have a meeting on Tuesday? I was like, no, I'll be in New York seeing Hamilton. And she was like, that is the coolest thing. And I was like, I was so sheepish about it when I at first, but now I'm like, know what? It was great to love it and see it and see the Chicago cast and have opinions. And, you know, I've got a friend who he collects Hard Rock Cafes, like that's his fandom, and that's a whole global fandom, and I never understood it. Then he explained to me it gave him destinations, Like, he could plan a trip to Europe around going to 5 Hard Rock cafes. Well, that's also going to 5 European capitals full of art museums. And, like, the Hard Rock Cafe is just, like, the excuse to pick a city.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. That's been my journey, I think, over the last, like, 3 years is to, like, just love some things and have fun doing that.
Yeah. I think, especially with, I think, music, film, TV, all of those, I think there's that level of, like, snobbery that gets built into, like, to like something critically means that you have to denigrate other things.
Right.
Or to say, like, well, this is good because it is somehow of higher quality or it's more intellectually stimulating or whatever. And I think people tend to fall into this idea of, like, in order to like something, it has to be, like, deeper than other things. And that if you don't like something, it's because it's just not, like, as... the quality isn't as good. It's not for intellectuals or whatever. We like over intellectualizing.
Yeah.
What you enjoy, especially with pop culture. And it's, you know, and it there's a lot of within fandoms about gatekeeping, who deserves to call themselves a fan and who gets to be considered a true fan and how much you need to know to be considered a true fan. And a lot of that is based around stereotypes too, like, you know, and especially in the rock world, women fans have to prove that they know as much, if not more, than a male fan to be considered to be a real fan. And stuff like that just gets exhausting. And it's usually just used to keep people out that, you know, other people want to keep out anyway. It's like, well, we don't want to consider you to be a part of this club, so we're going to use these like different barometers of like what it means to be a true fan to keep you out, as opposed to just saying we don't want you here because we don't think that you deserve to be here. And I just I bristle at that. It upsets me. So anytime people are like, I just love it because I love it and you're going to have to deal, I'm such an enabler of that, no matter who it is. Like, if somebody's like, I love it, I'm just like, tell me more. I can't wait to hear how much you love it because that's what it should be about.
Yeah. And it's so fun. And that's what has made this podcast so fun. And I'm only a couple months into this experiment, but getting people to talk about their favorite thing for an hour, you're not given an hour to talk about your favorite thing very often, right? Like, people are like, oh, okay, cool. So you went to Japan. Nice. Did you? And like, people want to like move you off the conversation and get back to like something else. But I love these conversations. It's so fun.
I love it too. I actually wanted to fangirl over that. I love the idea of that because you're absolutely right. And I feel like the conversation, if you're talking about this thing I love, that whole over-intellectualizing, like moving into like, okay, that's great that you love it, but like, what does it really mean? And sometimes what it really means is that you love it. And like, and it brings you joy. And this is why it brings you joy. And I feel like, you know, there's so much of a push to talk about why this thing is intellectually superior or why you feel like, as opposed to talking about why it brings you joy. And I don't know if in conversations about hobbies or whatever, we settle into that as much as we could, because it's always that push to like find this deeper meaning that's supposed to be life changing, as opposed to it's just fun.
It's just fun.
Just joyful. It just makes me happy and it brings a smile to my face. And this is why.
Yeah.
But not like this is why because I had, you know, this deep reason for why. It just make you happy.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a PhD thesis topic in order for you to love it.
Exactly.
Yeah. In the show notes, I will link to things, but you're the founder and editor of, I believe the founder and editor of The Learned Fangirl, which is a blog where you guys write really in-depth articles in different ways of looking at fandoms, different types of fandoms. You have like an incredible breadth of authors. Do you want to talk a little bit about like where that blog came from?
Sure. Me and my co-founder, Rezo, we went to college together. We both, we have similar interests in music and TV shows and movies, but we also have different interests, and we also come from different kind of academic backgrounds. She went to law school, I went to J school and did a lot of cultural studies type stuff, and she focuses a lot on like copyright and legal issues. But we always have these conversations about fandom that are, we love this and this is great, but then we also talk about kind of what fandom, what it means to be within a fan community. And there is a field of study called fan studies.
There is?
Yes. Yes, oh. There is. Mm-hmm. What's okay. Funny? Yeah. So fan studies is like the academic study of fandom communities and kind of how fan communities impact society and how society impacts fans. This, it was around the time, and there's a book by a researcher named Henry Jenkins.
Oh yeah, I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. And he's kind of broadly known as the godfather of fandom studies. A conference at MIT that he was at, and a bunch of people who study fandom, and we were like, hey, we talk about these fandom issues, like we should like co-write an article and like speak at this conference. why not? And
why
so
not?
We did that, and they accepted the paper, and then we went to this conference at MIT. It's called Media and Transition. I don't think it exists anymore. We spoke at that. It was an article that still gets cited today about canon, like a canon of a TV show or versus fanon, where it's like the fan-created canon that fans say this is what really happened within a TV show, and canon,
right.
Just like, and how sometimes fanon becomes canon over time.
And you wrote this and talked about this before the Disney Star Wars takeover and the whole like, this is legend, this is canon.
Right. Yeah, this was before a lot of that kind of writing. Like now you throw a rock, you kid about 20 articles that will talk about this regularly. This was like 2007,
yeah.
2008. That's how it started. We were like, let's have a space, because there really wasn't at that time. I was doing a lot of freelance writing still, but there still wasn't that kind of writing. Like places like the MarySue.com and other publications like that didn't exist yet. And so we're like, let's do this blog where we like write about this stuff. And that's where it started. And then it was just us. And then over time, we had other writers, other researchers that we kind of brought on. We got a little bit of money to pay folks. And yeah. We did that for a hot minute. I wish it could have been longer. Yeah, it grew from there where we, you know, we had a couple dozen authors write about fandom studies issues, but we didn't even want to call it fandom studies because neither of us are officially in that world. Like
right.
We didn't get PhDs. We are like peripheral fan studies researchers.
You're fans of fan studies.
Yeah. Although I guess kind of I am. So last year I was actually the keynote speaker at the fan studies. There's a fan studies association.
Yeah.
And I was the keynote speaker there talking about.
You're like a lay leader.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. I don't know. It's one of those things where I'm in it, but I still don't feel, and it's not like a lack of like, oh, I don't believe in myself enough to consider myself a part of it. I consider myself to be a critical writer about pop culture. And sometimes that overlaps into fan studies, but like, I can't see myself in that world because like it's about fandom studies, but I also, it's about things that are not connected to fan studies, like social justice and political economy and some of those things that impact fandom studies, but it's not just meta. And I guess because I consider myself, you know, I went to J school, and so I feel like that training makes a huge difference in terms of how I view my connection with this. And I kind of like feeling like I'm in it, but I'm not as connected into it as, like, I'm not a part of kind of the fan studies network. Like,
right.
I'm not trying to get into, I'm not trying to teach it. I'm not doing, like, I don't have a body of scholarship that is based around this one thing. I kind of go back and forth from different part, and I like having that. I think that's the writer in me that likes not being like, I'm not like the Star Wars girl or the K-pop girl or the metal girl. Like, I write about all of it, and having my hand in those different pots just makes me feel freer.
Today we are, we had kicked around a couple of things to talk about. And when we were talking about subjects, I had said specifically, if you're worn out talking about K-pop, we don't need to talk about K-pop. But you wanted to talk about like a niche within K-pop, which is K-pop Dollstagram. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe we can start a little bit big and then get into the niche. So K-pop is Korean pop music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I know about K-pop, I know from you and one other podcast episode of someone on another podcast talking about K-pop, that they're boy bands, that the boys have specific roles they play. And they're like massive. That is what I know about K-pop.
Okay, cool. So K-pop is Korean pop. There are girl groups too. There are boy groups and girl groups. And I think it was around 10 years ago, around a little after TLF started getting into K, like, I am primarily a metalhead, and I like heavy metal is kind of like the genre and fandom that was kind of the biggest part of my life growing up. And K-pop has had kind of different popularity waves over the past 20 years. I mean, now in the US, of course, with BTS, it's the biggest that it's ever been.
Yeah.
But like, there have been groups before, like Big Bang, like 21, artists like BoA, who Psy, of course, who before BTS was probably the most well-known. Artists like Rain, who have had like different levels of kind of not huge success, but like awareness within US pop culture in the past 10, 15, 20 years. I came to K-pop mostly because a lot of K-pop, especially 10 years ago, sounded very much like 90s R&B. And I was very much attracted to, I was like, yeah, this sounds like some Boyz II Men shit or something. And I was like, I got into it because it sounded a lot like 90s R&B and hip hop. That stuff that I wasn't necessarily hearing on the radio in the same way. And I really enjoyed like 21 before SHINee was like my favorite group. 21, which is a 4-member girl group, was kind of, if you know who Blackpink is now, which is like the biggest K-pop girl group that I think most people in the US know. 21 was like their precursor on the same label. Very similar style. They were like the four mothers to what Blackpink is now. And they disbanded and may get back together later. So I just got into K-pop because of it sounding a lot like R&B. You're like, oh, hey. And honestly, I liked some J-pop before. Nami Amuro is a J-pop performer who, at least for a short period during her time, sounded a lot like Janet Jackson. And so I really liked her stuff. And so I actually liked J-pop a little bit, or at least Nami Amuro, before I got into K-pop.
Okay.
Like, but it's hard for me, like, especially, it's kind of like asking how I got into metal. I don't know. I listen to everything. Like, I'm probably the wrong person to ask how I get into things, because I just absorb music.
Right. Totally fair.
Like, totally fair. I'm like, oh, I like that. It's like, how did you get into, like, I don't know, Genghis Khan? This is like really obscure thrash metal hardcore band. I don't know. I just heard them.
fair. So, totally fair.
So really getting into K-pop, it really, and what's weird is like I've listened to K-pop for like 10 years. And I think it was only in the past 5 years or so that K-pop Twitter was a thing. But I think with the increasing popularity of K-pop in the US, now it's like dominating Twitter in a way that it didn't like even 2 years ago.
Sure.
But like 5 years ago, I think is when I actually started to kind of participate in K-pop Twitter. Yeah. And it's weird now because I feel on a personal level, like the fandom, just like fandom in general on Twitter is very, and Twitter in general just can be a very toxic place. And so a lot of my love of the music is still there, but it's kind of hard for me to like really participate in it now because there's just a lot of bad vibes. And with the conversation about K-pop Twitter saving democracy and doing a lot of work for Black Lives Matter. And I've written a bit about that in different places and talked to different journalists about it. It's complicated.
Uh-huh.
It's one of those things where online culture in general, there's what is seen on Twitter and there's a lot of like the dark web and organizing and mobilizing that happens in spaces on the web that aren't seen, that impact people and impact us on a broader level that don't get seen because of the people who are really participating in it. So for example, I'm sorry, this gets a little heavy, but like the harassment of Black women during like in the mid 2010s that through 8chan and 4chan and different online communities that have targeted Black women. Like now it's a thing that people know about and they talk about and it's a point of dialogue and conversation that now people are really talking about. But at the time when people were saying, this is what's happening, nobody really did anything. Something similar is happening in K-pop right now, where you have a lot of Black women fans, for the most part, especially who are very much like me, who got into K-pop because of that it sounded like Black music. And like a big discussion within K-pop is the issue of cultural appropriation.
Right.
And what does it mean to have music that is very much influenced by Black artists, but then still have racist or, you know, racially offensive hairstyles or blackface or using, you know, racist language, which does happen in K-pop a lot. And so you have Black women who point that out and who have those conversations during times where it's probably not, you know, welcome to have those conversations, and it's right. messing with people's vibes. And so harassment happens in these spaces. And that was happening at the same time that a lot of this Black Lives Matter mobilization was happening within K-pop fandom, and it happening at the same time. So you had like Black fans being really badly harassed at the same time that K-pop fans were being celebrated for.
Yeah.
And so it was just a hard time for me and for a lot of fans, because it's like, I don't even like want to celebrate this, knowing that Black fans are not really safe right now to talk about any of this. So it was a really hard time for me to like talk about music that I still love and artists that I still think are fantastic, but just a weird time to talk about it. However, which gets to finding favorites, the best, the thing that has been like a safe space for me within K-pop fandom is a little place called Dollstagram. So within K-pop fandom, one thing that many fans have decided to do is make little plush dolls that are vaguely inspired by the K-pop artists. They are vaguely inspired by different K-pop artists. Sometimes they look like them, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're like little hybrid, like plush dolls that are like dogs or cats or bunnies that are supposed to be avatars of these K-pop artists. They're made by fans. They're not made by companies. They're designed and they work with a manufacturer in an area that does these plush dolls, and they create these dolls as little cute avatars for K-pop artists. I believe it started in Japan because it seems like for the most part, that's where a lot of the K-pop doll Instagram accounts that I saw first, starting about 3 years ago, where I saw them come from was Japan. But I think also Vietnam seems to have a big K-pop doll community for some reason.
So I'm scrolling lightly through the hashtag on Instagram.
Yeah.
So this is a fan will find a manufacturer, make a design, and then sell copies of that doll to other people in K-pop Dollstagram? Or like, do I write somebody on Etsy and say, I want a doll that's got like this type of hair and this outfit, and or is it yes and?
Well, what they'll do is they'll create the design of the doll and they'll say like, I want to make a doll. I'm going to use BTS because everyone knows BTS. Yeah. I want to make a doll that is RM from BTS with pink hair, and this is what it's going to look like. And they'll do the design of the doll, and then they'll post it usually on either Facebook, Instagram, wherever, Tumblr, and other people. There are K-pop fans who do mass group orders for their own country. And like, all of this is volunteer. Remember, like, none of these folks are talking to...
They're not from the label. They're not influencers. No. Yeah. They're not like seeding the community.
No, okay. They're just fans who want to make a cute little doll based on their favorite artist.
Yeah.
They design the doll. They announce the doll design. These fans that do group orders for dolls and different types of merch will basically place an order for a number of dolls. And then fans will order from... will like make a request from the group orderer that I want this doll. If there are little clothes that come with it, I want these two outfits. And then they pay the person who does the group order. And then the person who pays the group order like handles shipping and all that. And it's like a whole process.
Wow.
It's in like, it's all a labor of love. And I think that's what makes it really. So like the dolls are being made. In many cases, they'll make outfits that are like based on the stage designs. Like if there's like a popular concert or video or something, they'll design doll clothes that are like from this video or from this concert. And then there are other people who will design like costumes. Like I bought a chef costume just because it's cute. Yeah. Or like a baseball outfit or a football outfit or whatever you think might look cute on the doll.
And are the dolls kind of a standard body size? So you can, Barbie dolls are 11 inch dolls. So like you can buy Barbie clothes that fit Barbie, or you can buy like 11 inch doll clothes that will generally fit, or is there more variety in
there's doll a sizes? Little bit more variety, but for the most part, you'll see, I think like 8 centimeter and 20 centimeter.
Okay. Okay.
Like what you would normally think of for the size of a teddy bear, like something you would be able to snuggle. But then you have the smaller ones that you can like make tiny little outfits for. But it's, and Dollstagram is the hashtag that I showed you is kind of the broader one, but usually it's like for the group that you're into. So like shiny dolls, hashtag shiny dolls, hashtag BTS dolls, hashtag 17 dolls. Like you can basically go through and see different plush doll worlds created specifically for these groups. And I think just when we were talking before about things just being done out of love,
yeah,
and it's not about commerce and it's not really about anything but creating something cute that reminds you of this group that you like or that of this artist you like, and creating cute clothes that remind you of your favorite video or your favorite performance or whatever, and it's done for no other reason than that, I just find it so charming and so genuine and soft. And I think especially now where fandom is very toxic and can be very kind of a drag, where people are attacking each other for no reason and there's harassment, and to have this space that honestly is just people making cute plush dolls, making cute little outfits, and then like within these Dollstagram worlds you'll find people who use these dolls as a way of showing off the things that they're interested in other ways. Like there's a person that I follow, her and her doll go on a lot of hiking trips. And so there's just basically a lot of pictures of her and her doll in front of a waterfall or in front of like a trail that's very beautiful or like a beautiful sunset or the beach. And somebody else I follow has she's a cooking student. She's in cooking school. And so like she comes up with all these little recipes and she'll make them and then have the doll sitting in front of this recipe and then have like the next slide be the recipe that she's made. I think it's just one of those things. To me, it's like the purest example of what fandom and fan communities are, because it really is about sharing love and joy with other people and admiring things that are cute and admiring things that are soft and lovable. And people don't really talk about it, even though there's a whole community around it. Like I have friends within the Dollstagram community and like we're in group chats together and we talk about all these different things, but it seems to be a world that is not really focused on when talked about, when music fandom or especially K-pop fandom is talked about. This seems to be a
mysterious secret corner.
Yeah, a secret world within fandom that I almost felt weird about talking about it, because I'm like, well, I don't want to blow its cover in any way and have like, but I do think it's something that should be celebrated, because even what I was talking about before, where how the group orders are done and then people design, like this is pretty sophisticated when you think about it. And it is, but it's what in fandom studies is called a gift community, where it's like you're doing it, you know, a gift economy, sorry. Where you're doing it for the love, you're doing it because you want to share something with other fans, and it's not about like turning a profit. It really is like making these dolls so that you share this cute thing with other people who would appreciate this cute thing.
Because I remember when you, on one of your trips to Japan, I remember, so our shiny fans are called shawas.
Yes.
Okay. These are obviously things I've read on your Twitter account for years and I've never said out loud. So, but I remember you talking about how the fans had organized all sorts of different like lighting, like didn't people have like not lightsabers, but like different ways of different lights that they were using, that they were like the crowd was like kind of dancing together, or like some fan organized swag going into the concerts.
Oh, okay. Yes. So this is, this is another great example. So in the K-pop world, there are these things called fan lights. And fan lights are actually created by the label. They're official pieces of merch that you have at a concert. So each fandom and each group has a specific color. So for SHINee, their color is called Pearl Aqua. It's basically like an aquamarine blue. And the fan lights are created by the company so that fans can bring them into the concerts and just have it to wave around. And so okay. If you ever see a picture of a K-pop show, you'll see basically all these lights that are the same color. And those aren't like lighters or phones or anything. These are fan lights.
Okay.
At the time, because this was honestly before, this was like 2017, which was before now, where K-pop, like the first concert that I went to for K-pop was for 21, which was like 2009. There was no merch. There was no merch whatsoever. There were no fan lights. So all these things that were kind of a part of the K-pop live experience in the US, you could not get them because that was their promoters then didn't necessarily, I guess, know that fans were going to want to pay money for this kind of stuff. So like there was not a fan light. There was no merch at all.
Weird. And
yeah. I still, my mind is blown.
Because there's been merch at every other type of music show in the U.S. forever. Like merch is how musicians survive. They don't survive on, they survive on merch sales.
Right. I don't know. I just don't think they were thinking about it like that.
Sure.
So yeah. So I would say until the last maybe 2-3 years or so, you really get to see like merch, like official merch being made available for K-pop fans. But so at this show or at these shows, there were no fan lights available. They were not going to make fan lights available for fans to buy at the show. It was very hard at the time to be able to order something like that because like K-pop fandom had not reached critical mass at the time. So you couldn't buy, if you bought one, you would probably be spending like $100 and it would take like 3 months to get here.
Right.
So what happened was Japanese K-pop fandom in general is just on a different stratosphere. Like there's so much merch. There's so much merch that's plentiful and you can get it all the time. And fan lights, they have a new fan light for every concert tour. So you could get a new and different fan light and they look different. They're shaped differently. It's
okay. Yeah.
Japanese fans basically sent old fan lights to U.S. fans and Canadian fans for SHINee so that they could have a Pearl Aqua fandom audience. And based for free, it was like you didn't have to pay for them, like hundreds and hundreds of fan lights for fans to just basically pick up. At the beginning of the show, there was like long lines of fans just to get a fan light, to get a free.
So the Japanese fans organized like a mass shipment of their old fan lights.
Yes. To give away to fans.
To give away to American and Canadian fans. I love that. That is such a not only do they want you to enjoy the music, they want you to have like the ultimate fan experience, which includes the fan light in the correct color.
Exactly. Exactly. And that to me was one of the best examples of like what fandom is.
Yeah.
It's selfless giving and kind of sharing the joy and sharing the love and giving something away for free, knowing that really the reward is just seeing other people happy.
Yeah.
And to have that experience that you got to enjoy it. Yeah. It's one of those experiences that like made me really proud to be a Shawal, but also just really made me proud to really understand what that meant for fandom. And it's an act of generosity like that, that you will still see a lot of that within K-pop fandom. But I think that, unfortunately, I think social media makes it more, I don't know. It's just harder now. I think, unfortunately, social media highlights a lot of the bad things, but I think there's still wonderful examples of just generosity and sharing of love. And it's one of the, I still have a warm and fuzzy feelings every time I think about how great that experience was.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of that in Dollstagram too. I think that that's something that like that sense of generosity and sharing things. Like, I've sent dolls to other people. Like, I get a doll, I get extra dolls, and I send them.
Yeah.
Clothes. If somebody gets a doll and they don't have clothes for the doll, it's like, I'll send you some. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's just adorable.
That's so you'll, how many dolls have you have come through your house?
At this point, I actually have a fairly small collection compared to some folks I know, and it's about 20 dolls.
Yeah.
But I know other people who have like 50, 60 dolls. Yeah. But I have an Instagram, and I have a Twitter feed, and like I make, and you'll see on my normal Instagram page, like a few pictures of my dolls staring at my food or whatever.
Yeah.
But for my Dollstagram specific feed, like, I have a whole alternate universe set of pictures of my trips to Japan that are featuring my dolls and only my dolls. So,
wow.
Like, yeah.
So you've been doing Dollstagram for, because your last trip to Japan was a couple years ago, maybe?
Yeah. I've been in Dollstagram for maybe it's close to 4 years now.
Yeah.
So I have a whole set of pictures. And even when I just go on other trips, I'll usually bring one doll so that I can just do Dollstagram pictures in front of things. And that's a lot. There's a lot of folks that basically use their dolls. It's not just an avatar for the K-pop performer. It's an avatar for yourself.
Sure.
So you're taking pictures in front of the Eiffel Tower or in front of whatever, and using the doll as kind of a stand-in for what you would be doing. I think it's a great way for people to kind of share their interests with other folks without taking pictures themselves.
Yeah, it definitely allows you any anonymity that you want to have in it, mm-hmm. without putting, when you're using the dolls instead of yourself,
mm-hmm.
and they're always made up.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I hope I described it well, because I think there's just such a charm in the way that it's used to connect with people without really having to show yourself.
Yeah.
I think there's a freedom in that for the folks who do it, because it does give you an opportunity to say, like, I'm having these great adventures, but it doesn't feel like taking selfies of yourself all the time.
Yeah.
It's really great. When I'm having a bad day, no matter what kind of day it is, I will just go to Dollstagram and look at cute pictures of dolls staring at food or looking at sunsets or
on adventures with each other.
Yeah. It's a very kind of pure childlike place, but also I think it's just a place where fans can feel good about just liking things. We were talking about that before, where I think fans can just be happy and enjoy cute things and not have to, like, there are no fan wars or fights about who's the most popular or whatever. I think it's just mostly fans enjoying cute things and each other and cheering on each other's accomplishments. I remember there was one group chat that I was in where we were all basically taking pictures of our dolls next to whatever our garden hall was. So it's like, I grew 4 tomatoes, here's my doll in front of it. It's a lot of fun.
So then you're able to find the intersection of like the gardeners and the K-pop fans and the Dollstagram fans.
There's a pretty large intersection, surprisingly. I feel like a lot of Dollstagram folks are homebodies. So,
yeah.
So it's like, here's my knitting. Here's my garden. Here's the food that I made. Here's like some muffins I just baked. And here's my doll staring at it.
Now, have you ever thought about heading up a group order? Do you have any design?
No. I have no talent when it comes to that. Plenty of ideas, but no way to actually like see that through.
Yeah.
I definitely don't have that kind of talent. And I just don't have the organizational skills to head up a group order. That it's a lot of responsibility. And I think it's a lot of, you know, you're basically shipping off sometimes hundreds of dolls to folks, or clothes or whatever. It's like a little job you don't get paid for.
Right.
And I definitely don't have the organizational skills for it. And I definitely don't have the talent to create anything. But I'm always in awe of the people that do. If I did a fan studies piece of research on that, I would actually want to interview folks, because I would love to know what the motivation is, like, to take that on,
right?
To do what is essentially like a small business that you don't get paid for. You're really just the conduit for other people to get their dolls. You're not really making money off of it,
right?
So, like, yeah.
Yeah. So what are some ideas you have of dolls that you hope come to, like, that you wish somebody would design?
For me, like, I have a ton of shiny dolls. There's outfits that I would like. There's some iconic shiny outfits that I would love to have. There's Everybody is one of their albums, and it has like this very iconic kind of black and white large hat situation.
Yeah.
I can link to it. Like, if you see it, like, it's probably one of their most memorable looks, and I would just love those outfits. But I would also love some 21 dolls. I feel like 21 came and went before Dollstagram was really a thing, but I'm still a fan of that group, and I would love to have some dolls for them.
Yeah. I Googled shiny large hat, and it came up right away. These like huge discs, these huge black discs, mm-hmm. almost.
Yeah.
They're so dramatic.
Yes. Dramatic is the right word. And just the outfits in general, like, they're these kind of drapey, almost dress kind of situations. They're like very androgynous. It's just a fantastic look. It's so memorable, and it just looks, I think it would just be adorable.
It would be so cool.
I would love to see, I think kind of what I'm getting at with talking about this is, I think that there's like a spirit of support and sharing that I would love to see return itself to K-pop fandom that I kind of miss.
Yeah.
Like, it's still there, but I would love to see this part of K-pop fandom be what people really talk about. Yeah.
An experience. You probably want more people to experience the gift economy versus like the coordinated harassment of women, of black women.
Exactly.
Online.
Yes.
When like, you have to pick and choose experiences.
Right. Like, yeah. I would love to see like somebody write about how fun this is. And like, this is the thing that brings them in, as opposed to like, I made a comment on Twitter and like 400 people decided to yell at me on Twitter, and then I got doxxed, which unfortunately is a bad experience. Like, that is some people's introduction to this fandom, is being attacked by other fans because they made a comment that other people didn't take kindly to. If you don't know, just don't say anything, because people don't care what you don't know. They're going to come and attack you. But there's a lot of fun. There's a lot of, there's just a lot of sharing and fun and creativity that's there. And I think people do get to see the fun part of it. But I think the quaintness of Dollstagram is something that I don't know people get to see a lot of. And I just wanted to take a moment to celebrate it, because
it's so precious. I'm sharing my screen. Look at these little, it's two dolls that are in little crocheted coveralls, one with a French flag and one with a British flag, and little headbands. And it's just precious.
Yes. The knitting, there's so much knitting and crocheting. And I
really,
yeah, that's the other thing that you'll see a lot of.
Ah! Cuties with these little tiny backpacks for like going back to school.
Yes. This is what I love. And people really go out of their way to take like really aesthetic pictures.
They really do.
People plan this shit. Outfits that look like performance outfits. And like, I would love to see more of that. I think that's something that shiny Dollstagram needs to do more of, is like the iconic outfit making.
Oh, they're so cute. Yes.
It's just adorable.
It's like, just adorable. They're so delightful.
My lack of crafting talent is really evident here, because I see a lot of people doing really
cute there's a
things.
Lot of crocheting, and it looks like a lot of, honestly, a lot of these outfits look machine sewn. Mm-hmm. And they're so tiny.
Yeah.
I mean, just teeny tiny.
Well, something that's really cute that happened. So with COVID, they shut down in Korea baseball games. And there was a hot second where they had to fill the stands.
Yeah.
They filled the stands with plushies.
Uh-huh.
And my first thought was, were there any K-pop plushies in the audience? And then somebody tweeted me and said, yes, there were, and showed me this picture of like there were some EXO dolls in the audience watching baseball games.
That's awesome. I will encourage anyone listening to go to their Instagram account and just put in the hashtag K-pop Dollstagram, and then find something that speaks to you and click another hashtag and go down the hashtag rabbit hole, because they just strike a chord of that, like kittens. It's the same emotion of like seeing a kitten or a puppy almost.
Yeah, it's like, it really is just about a celebration of cuteness. And also I think a celebration of people's own, because you saw there's lots of crocheting and there's pastries and there's gardens. I think it's showing kind of people's own interests through these dolls. And I really do think that like once you go down that rabbit hole, you'll see kind of people's own interests and their own personalities really come into play with how their K-pop Dollstagram account is run. Like I have a friend who, she does little themed videos that have like plots and whatnot, and they're short and cute and just adorable. Like, you know, nothing like Breaking Bad level plot wise, but just but just cute, like short animated things that are just, you know, there to make you smile. Yeah, I love it a lot. It's probably one of the bright spots of the internet for me, and it's definitely one of the bright spots of K-pop fandom. And I'm always so excited when one of my friends who was into K-pop, they're like, I got a doll. I was like, I'll introduce you to, right. I was like, I'll DM you my doll accounts.
This is so fun, because I just, you know, when I looked at the hashtag before when you first told me about it, I was like, I do not understand what I'm looking at.
Right.
So the added context makes it even more fun to scroll through and understand, like, I mean, just understanding that it's not merch, that it's not official label driven merch, that this is fans who are creating experiences for each other. And an experience there's so many fan experiences that during COVID have come to a screeching halt. Like, there are no live shows, there's no meetups, there's no cons, it's also, I think, really interesting to see a corner of the fandom that can thrive during COVID.
That's an excellent point. Yeah. And I do think that, you know, with there being no concerts or cons or places for people to really congregate, I feel like there has been kind of an extra attention paid to like creating online experiences to like make people excited, bring people together. And I think I personally have seen like more videos and more like just projects that have been done within this space of the internet, I think, because people are kind of craving to connect with each other and, you know, and share the excitement that they still have. And I do think COVID has made that, and everybody has more time on their hands. Because we're all stuck here.
We're all stuck at home.
Right. Yeah. So I do think that I've seen a little bit more, like, I've definitely seen an increase in, like, aesthetics, K-pop, Instagram aesthetics. I'm like, wow, you really took a long time with this. It's great. And it's hard to describe. So I really, not just doing this, but really, like, taking the time to really get into, like, why this is so charming to me. Once you're in it and you see it and you kind of get what's going on, it really is like just a delightful world to escape to that has no other point but to delight you.
Yeah.
And that just makes me really happy.
It's really such an unexpected corner of a music, of liking a type of music. There's nothing I can think of. You know, I listen to one of the podcasts that I listen to, I'm in a Facebook fan group where there are people that like make fan t-shirts and sell them, you know, they'll put them on TeePublic or wherever, and they'll just sell them at like the lowest cost the website will let them sell them for.
Yeah.
But that's still not, that is not the effort of this sort of thing, of this sort of group order or the creativity. It's phenomenal. I'm so grateful that you opened this door to me.
Oh, thanks so much. You actually inspired me anew. There's at some point I would love to just, it needs to be recorded in some way or like researched, and not in a way to like exploit it or to capitalize upon it, but at least to me to like honor it. I think that this space where people create, it's like zine making. And I know that's kind of a weird thing to compare it to, but I think
it's not weird. It reminds me of, I've heard stories about how that like Star Trek fans, there was this whole economy of videotape trading.
Yes.
Right. It's like that. Mm-hmm. It's the fan to fan sustaining of an art, of a culture, of a piece of pop culture. So
you're spot on.
You know, and there's also a little bit of Burning Man in it.
Mm. Wow.
I'm gonna give you chapters of a book.
Yeah, no, for real. No, please, actually, like go there, like take this a little further, like tell me more where you're going with this,
because I think there's something to the fan to fan, the gift economy, the experience economy is not the word I want to use, but there's the Star Trek tapes that I've heard about. I do think there's zines. I think zines are absolutely a place in that. Or I was talking to Jason Diamond a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about like the skateboard videotapes they used to make in high school and what music they would put on their skateboard tapes. And then you pass these like tapes around with other skater punks. And I think that when you look at Burning Man, I've never gone. I don't like sand. I'm not trying to go. But I've read a lot about it because it fascinates me. But it was built on the idea of, it wasn't meant to be a commodity. It was meant to be like, you bring everything you need to survive for the weekend, but also you give and are given, you give and receive experiences throughout the weekend of Burning Man.
Yeah.
And I think that you could put K-pop Dollstagram firmly in there. I wonder what the other ones that,
I think within K-pop fandom, there's a lot like translation kind of exists within that fan translation, because that's a lot, you know, so much is like interviews and concert videos and so many things that are translated by fans. That used to be the case for anime too, before anime got big enough that like the companies actually would release things officially, but like fan subs and fan dubs back in the earlier days of anime, where you just had a VHS and fans would translate the entire show. And that actually exists too with Asian dramas, where you have volunteer groups of fans who translate shows that are not yet available like officially, formally within the States. Like there's a lot of kind of small volunteer based fan to fan communities of labor, for lack of a better way to describe it, that exists. That, and this is what fan studies often talks about, but I think it's not always done. It's not really talked about on a political economy scale, which is kind of the way that I think about it.
Because seed swapping fits into this, right? Like seed swaps and getting people away from mass produced seeds and heirloom tomato seeds and like mailing packets of seeds across the country to each other. I think even fits in with that, sort of idea. And seeds are super political.
Yes.
So
that's awesome. Like now my brain is really kind of percolating with all of this, because there is such a history of this, like of within fandom communities that gifted labor. And I think maybe that is a big reason why it appeals to me so much, is that is a place where that exists, that hasn't yet been commodified, and I hope it isn't. I love it a lot. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to chat about it.
Of course. Where can people find you on the internet that you want to be found?
I'm at KDC on Twitter, and you can always see me there. I have a tiny letter called Goth Career Woman that I put out. I try to put it out once a month with the Now Times. I think it's less than that. I think it's now every 2 months or so.
Yeah.
And that's where I talk about, like, if I've written anything for publication lately, or if I'm doing like a live lit event or whatever, then there's that. There's a Fan Studies Network conference that's happening in October, and I'm on a panel talking about K-pop. I'm bringing that up because if you want to hear me talk more about K-pop, I'll happily do it there.
What is that conference called?
The Fan Studies Network. That's pretty much it. Oh, and I'm at KedraDChaney.com, and I put a lot of my writing and what I'm up to there as well.
Fantastic. Well, we'll make sure to include links to these things, and we'll find the specific conference and link to it in the show notes. But this is Cowboy. Be nice. We'll make sure to link to all of this in the show notes. And this has just been really fun. I feel like we've been internet friends for so long, and we see each other, I feel like, in person once every 2 years. We are at the same reading.
It's true.
But I feel like I know you better than someone I see every 2 years, because we've been in each other's circles for over a decade.
Yeah, we have like 10 years worth of relationship, even if it's not in person a lot of the time.
And yeah,
that counts.
It absolutely counts. And it was really nice to clarify my memories of some of your trips to Japan. You know, the lightsabers, the shiny lightsabers.
I love it. I'm going to start calling them. Well, they do sometimes. Like, some of them do actually look like lightsabers. So I totally,
So, Kedra, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me, Leah. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.